this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Well, hello, Y'allitics listeners and viewers as well. Hope that you made it through Thanksgiving without anybody ruining it at the table with political talk, and you're still friends with all the family members as we head into Christmas.
Well, yeah, way to get into the positivity of the Thanksgiving holiday here, Wheeler.
That was
totally
hopeful. I was saying I hope that everything went great and that it's still going great. What, where was the loss of hope in that?
Well, I don't know. I was surprised at that. At that open, of all opens, but I shouldn't be surprised with you.
I'll tell you what, don't be surprised because I've got more positivity coming your way right now. You want to hear it?
Yeah, let me. I do want to hear it. What is it?
I want to, you know, as I get ready to crack one open here, and I'll just go ahead and do that. I'm going to toast you today and thank you. I'm going to thank you for not locking your desk drawer because that's where I got this beer today because I'm at the office.
yeah, clearly you are. So what are you drinking then? I have a lot of stuff in there. What are you drinking?
You'll recognize it because it's from your desk. It's an Oak Cliff Lager.
Yes, those are good.
And I'm trying to keep my beer choice local. You know, of course, a Corona or a Dos Equis sounded good, but, you know, I'm preparing just in case those might get more expensive down the road. I'm preparing and trying to get a good local taste going.
Well, in light of the topic of our podcast today, I'm having an import.
Ah, there you go.
Tecate.
Do it while you can.
Do it while you can still afford these beers because who knows what's going to happen. And it is Hecho en México, which means
Hecho.
The first H isn't pronounced.
The H is silent. It's like
Houston. You're my translator, Wheeler. You're my translator.
It's just like Houston. The H is silent in Hecho. Hecho means made.
And how do you pronounce the opposite of urban?
The opposite of urban? Rural.
Rural?
Rural. Rural. So, you're smart to do that. And you know, so we are talking about tariffs today, specifically with regard to Mexico. I'm curious, because Canada is included in this as well, and China was mentioned as well. Do you have Canadian beer and Chinese beer there in your house as well, just, you know, at the ready?
I like Tsingtao from China. What's the Canadian beer? What's the Budweiser of Canada? I was thinking of Foster's.
Is it Molson?
Molson, that's it. Yeah.
Weird beer knowledge there.
Yeah, that is odd beer knowledge. Now, here's the deal. This has been in the news. You know, President-elect Trump is trying to fulfill his campaign promise, and he told China and Mexico and Canada, listen, if you don't stop the illegal drugs and the undocumented immigrants from coming across our borders, we're going to add 25% on tariffs onto all products from Canada and Mexico and 10% for China. The question is that really going to happen on day one? Now, I think he's floating it here, you know, 2 months before he takes office, month and a half before he takes office, as a trial balloon. I just can't see that this is going to happen. He's trying to exact some change out of our biggest trading partners, but I don't know if it's going to become a reality. I think that Prime Minister Trudeau in Canada, President Sheinbaum, the new president of Mexico, even, you know, despite the loud talk that both of them have had, you know, saying, clapping back and saying, we'll do the same thing to you, the United States. I just don't think it's going to happen. It's not good for anybody. It's not good for the U.S. It's not good for Texas. It's not good for China, Mexico, or Canada.
Yeah, you know, interesting thing on that note. I agree with where you're coming from there, that, you know, maybe this is just meant to be floated out there, put them on notice, and maybe see if they'll come to a negotiating table and do some things and bend to some will here. In particular, the president of Mexico, Sheinbaum, really came out forcefully after this was put out on social media by the president-elect, and she, you know, sort of laid it out there and said, you know, you do it, we do it. We'll do it right back to you, blah, blah, blah. And she actually said, we negotiate as equals. There is no subordination here because we are a great nation. We're going to get into more of what she had to say here in just a moment. But I think it's significant because, you know, the Associated Press spoke with an expert about this, Jason. And that expert said just the fact that she was so forceful in coming back like that could actually make this tariff go into effect because, you know, there's not as much face-saving ability for Trump here. And, he, you know, he's not going to want to look like, you know, he's backing down in response to that. And so that's going to be interesting to see. Does that have something to do with the whole dynamic as far as this tariff, whether it becomes reality or not. If it does become reality, there are people who think that it will be fairly temporary, just because it would be so damaging and to all economies involved, especially the longer it goes on.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, this is going to cost a lot of money. I think that President-elect Trump floating this, there are going to be diplomats working in the background to try to get this thing settled. There will be an announcement. Mark my words for the new year, Wheeler. There will be an announcement just before Donald Trump takes the oath of office that he has gotten some concessions from Mexico, that you know, maybe they're going to add more soldiers to the border. He needs something like that. And the same with Canada. Something's
going to
happen.
And it could even be one of those things where, like, you agree to add two more soldiers to the border. Good, I can say you're adding more soldiers to the border.
That's it.
Just in order to get out from under having to actually go through with this. That's an interesting notion. You know, only time will tell on that. But if this happens, we knew exactly who to talk to about this. You know, people have been talking about, oh, it could be dire, it could be hard, it could be tough. We wanted some actual numbers on this, and there is the perfect guy here in Texas to give you the numbers. I mean, you give him the inputs, this guy can tell you what's going to happen down the road with something, and he's been crunching those numbers, and he is prolific at this. He is listened to by the titans in business and in government.
Yeah, and his name is Ray Perryman. He runs the Perryman Group in Waco, and the fact that he ran these numbers, and he's given them to Yolitix first. You heard it here first. But it shows the impact if this does become reality when President Trump takes the oath of office in January. If this happens, it's going to cost billions of dollars. It's going to cost thousands of jobs on both sides of the border, Canada, U.S., Mexico, U.S., and likely even China as well. That's why I think cooler heads will prevail. But putting the reality behind it is what Ray Perryman does, putting the hard numbers behind it. And that's why we wanted to give him a call.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. For another smart conversation on Eolitics.
So, Ray, thanks so much for being with us to talk about this. Everybody's talking about it right now. Before we dive into some new numbers that we asked you to see if you could crunch on this, I just want to put this out there for people and maybe embarrass you a little bit. Your group there, the Perryman Group, which is based in Waco, has done extraordinary work over the years. And I just have to tick some of this off so that people understand where you're coming from. You've had more than 3,000 clients, 2/3 of the Global 25, more than half of the Fortune 100 have been your clients, the 12 largest technology firms in the world, 12 U.S. cabinet departments, the 9 largest firms in the U.S., the 6 largest energy companies operating in the U.S., and the 5 largest U.S. banking institutions. And you all have put together all of these different policy studies, more than 1,000 of those over the years as well. So to say that you all work with the biggest power players on the most important economic issues is a huge understatement.
Well, you left out Yolitix.
And Yolitix.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah, you've been on Yolitix several times. And that's so, right. You know, that's huge right there. That's part of your pedigree. And we know that lawmakers in Austin and even in Washington pay close attention to the things that you all put out, and you give them the good and the bad and the ugly. Where does this one hit as far as good, bad, or ugly when you start looking at these proposed Trump tariffs, particularly with regard to Mexico and its effect on Texas?
Well, it's somewhere between bad and ugly, that's for sure. Basically, I think there's been a lot of misunderstanding about this stuff. I mean, there's been things put out in the media that somehow the foreign countries are going to pay these tariffs and that sort of thing. That's not how it works. I mean, if you've ever gone to a foreign country and bought something, the merchant didn't pay any tariff and the government didn't pay any tariff. When you came back to the country and filled out your customs form and went through customs, you pay the tariff. And the same thing happens whether it's you bringing across some trinket from another country or whether it's a boatload of stuff arising from into the port of Houston or a big load of a big truckload coming in across the bridge at Laredo. It doesn't matter. The tariff's paid here. And then how much of that gets passed to the consumer or the merchant depends on the relative importance of the good and supply and demand, old-fashioned supply and demand. But one way or the other, it's entities in the United States that are making those payments.
And Ray, a lot of people probably don't realize what all we get from Canada and Mexico, especially Mexico being our largest trading partner here in Texas. What kind of industries would be impacted? How much more would I be paying for things if I go to Best Buy or Amazon or Kroger?
Well, we looked at this whole thing across the entire thing. If we truly put in 25% tariffs and we left them in place long enough to really have an impact, which I think is far-fetched because people start seeing this happen very quickly, the overall inflation rate in the country would go up a little over 1%. Now, but what that means is if you stop and think about it, right now it's around 2.5%. If it went to 3.5%, that would start the Federal Reserve raising interest rates again. You know, I mean, it starts a whole chain reaction of things that can happen. But yeah, we import a lot of things that are critical. I mean, some of the major things that I think would interest a lot of people is agricultural food products. We'd lose more than $20 billion there. The automobile industry, there's a lot of, you know, Ford General Motors plants in Mexico. A lot of the parts for the ones manufactured here in the United States are made in Mexico. That's about $19 billion. Electronics, a lot of the things in all the devices we use all the time, $22 billion. A lot of our, you know, we get some oil from those countries. There are two largest countries we import oil from, but also other petroleum-related products, another $18 billion. So a lot of things that we use every day, I mean, filling up our cars, driving our cars, owning our cars, eating, you know, our phones, our devices, our televisions, all of those things come into play when you start talking about these countries because it's a huge amount of economic activity.
And Ray, what do you do about this? You know, the automobile industry in particular has really thrived with this working relationship between the U.S. and Mexico. And a lot of times what you'll see is, you know, a particular piece of a car or of a vehicle can go across that border several times, you know, to have something added to it, sent back across, something else is added to it, sent back across again, and then back across again. How does that work if something keeps on coming back over multiple times like that?
Well, the way it works, if you don't have some type of trade agreement in place, which we've been blessed to have with Mexico for a long time now, is every time it crosses the border, the extra value added, you layer another 25% tariff onto it. And that very quickly makes some of these things, really escalates the impact of this overall. It's not at all uncommon to see a major product like a car cross parts of it cross the border 6-7 times in the course of manufacturing. That's a pretty common thing. Mm.
And you mentioned that trade agreement. We have the USMCA, the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, which was the replacement for NAFTA. It kicked in 2020. And, you know, think about your years there. That was during the Trump presidency. This was negotiated by his team. He hailed it as a historic win for American workers. What happens to the USMCA if we start levying tariffs of 25% on Mexico and Canada? It would seem, you know, ABC News was saying that that would threaten to just totally blow up that whole agreement.
Well, absolutely. And I'm old enough and been around this long enough, as you pointed out, I've been around a while that I was involved in both of those agreements and the analysis and putting together both of those agreements. And yeah, I mean, but right now we essentially have free trade back and forth. There's a few limited things in a few areas, but basically things go back and forth without any tariffs associated with them. If we put on 25% tariffs, that obviously blows that up. I think there's an almost 100% certainty we would see retaliation if we did that. In fact, President Sheinbaum pretty well said she will retaliate. I'd be surprised if Canada didn't retaliate if we start doing things like their lumber, their steel, a number of things that are very, very important to that economy. If we start slapping these tariffs on there, and of course that affects home building prices and all sorts of things. But yeah, I mean, basically we don't have a free trade agreement if everything that crosses the border is subject to a 25% tariff on our end. That's not free trade. That's the exact opposite of free trade. So it has a whole lot of implications as you look forward. I mean, just looking at the numbers, we see it lowering the GDP by almost 1%, about $250 billion if this thing went in effect and stayed in effect, losing almost 2 million jobs in the country. I mean, it's a very major situation.
Well, that's what I want to ask you next. Go through some of the numbers you ran here and released on Monday, because it's pretty significant if this happens, as you said.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Basically, what we found was about 58% of the impact comes from Mexico, about 42% from Canada in round numbers, because Mexico is now our largest trading partner over the past few years. That's a shift from what it's been in the past. And basically, we found a loss of in gross national product of about $250 billion a year. That's almost 1% of the total, about 0.95%. Job wise, even a little bit more than that, again, about 1.97 million jobs, almost 2 million jobs are lost. And I mentioned some of the numbers earlier with some of the major industries, the inflation going up. Texas alone, because we are disproportionately impacted by Mexico, we're by far the largest trading partner for Mexico and a very significant one for Canada as well. Texas alone would lose about 370,000 jobs if something like this came into place and stayed in place. I mean, all this assumes that it would stay in place. As a practical matter, I think once you put something like this in and people realize what's happening, they would probably back off and figure out some way to declare victory and move on, so to speak. But yeah, it has the potential to have profound impacts. We're looking at about a $47 billion loss in gross product in Texas. I mean, and that's without considering the implications of what if there's, you know, what if they respond back and put tariffs on us? That just escalates this. What if this causes the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates? It just escalates from that. We didn't put any of that into this. This is just basically what this particular provision would do, just a 25% tariff on both countries.
Boy, those are some staggering numbers when you throw them out. And what really hits is, I think, that nearly 2 million jobs lost in the U.S. Absolutely. Would be the potential with something like this. It really kind of gives the gravity of what we're talking about here. I think a lot of people don't really understand tariffs or how they work, as you alluded to in the beginning here. But you can understand potential results if something like this goes into effect and actually sticks. And so I want to ask you this. Texas leaders, you know, they're aware of, you know, the trade that we've been doing with Mexico. You said Mexico is our leading trade partner. It has been here in Texas for a long time, but you were talking about nationally. Now they've overtaken everybody else as well, and they're the number one trading partner for the U.S. So many elected leaders here in Texas, though, have been largely supportive of what President-elect Trump plans to do at the border. In fact, Agriculture Commissioner Sid Miller said that tariffs are a good negotiating tool and could encourage Mexico to shut down the border, and dismissed any potential economic impacts as temporary, according to the Texas Tribune. What's your take on that?
Well, they'd only be temporary if the policy's temporary. I mean, that's why I say it's just inconceivable that something like this could last an extended period of time. I think there's better ways to negotiate about the border. We're already making a lot of progress there. We clearly have some issues that need to be addressed. There's no question about that. I don't think anyone questions that. A lot of progress has been made in the past 6 months or so. I think that, you know, there's other things that can be done. You have new leadership in Mexico that I think is willing to work on those issues with the United States. Canada, the prime minister's already indicated he's willing to work on those types of issues. I mean, I think that I'm not saying there's not issues that need to be addressed. I'm saying of all the ways you could pick to address them, this is about the worst we could see, because tariff impacts are very significant. I mean, just when we had the situation of 2 or 3 years ago when we were stopping the trucks at the border and just for extra inspections and that sort of thing, just doing that alone, which is a fairly minor policy compared to something like this, was costing the economy about $1 billion a day.
Yeah, that was the last time we spoke with you, I believe, and that was Governor Abbott's doing down there. At the end of the day, though, Ray, you've been around politics long enough to realize kind of what the reality is here. What does your gut tell you on this? Is this really going to happen, or is this the president-elect kind of floating a trial balloon saying, listen, I'm going to do this, and he's trying to exact some change or at least some concessions from Mexico and maybe Canada as well? Is this really going to happen, or is this just posturing by the new president?
Well, I think, you know, as I said, if it does happen, I can't imagine it would last very long. I think it would be a very temporary sort of thing. It might be done as a symbolic thing for a short period of time. But given the economic consequences, I don't think it would persist. And I don't think the president would want to. I mean, no one wants to preside over the loss of a lot of jobs, the increases in inflation, that sort of thing. No president wants to do that. We've seen in the past, during the previous administration with President Trump, when he would have a policy and things would start going the wrong way, he would try to shift the policy as is natural thing to do. So I think that, you know, anything like this that would be this catastrophic for that very reason alone is not something that's likely to be sustainable. So I think you may see it put in effect. There's been a lot of discussion about signing it on day one, that sort of thing. You may see something like that happen, but implementing something like this and persisting with it would cause so much harm, I can't imagine that it would be sustained.
Ray, we talked to you in the first Trump administration about the possibility of tariffs with Mexico, and those amounts that were being thrown out were much lower back then,
right,
than what we're talking about this time around. ABC News was speaking with a trade and economics professor at Texas A&M who said that, you know, if you're on the football field and you call the same play twice, it's not going to be as effective the second time. Basically saying that, you know, a lot of these countries are going to go, yeah, we know how to deal with this time. And you referred to this new president in Mexico, Claudia Sheinbaum. And boy, she came out with this blistering response, you know, as far as, you know, when you compare it to other world leaders and how they've dealt with the former president, the president-elect Trump, she came out with a blistering response and basically said, we'll match you tariff for tariff until we, you know, really cut into each other's economies here. This isn't the best way to go. And we've actually been doing a lot to stop, you know, illegal immigration into your country and to stop drugs flowing into your country. But you haven't been doing enough to stop guns flowing into our country. And, right. You know, that's all because of your drug problem there in the U.S. I mean, it was just blistering. And I'm just curious, as someone who's worked on NAFTA and USMCA and dealt with, you know, trade and representatives for so long and big time leaders, were you shocked by the tone of what she came back with?
Well, I wasn't shocked. I mean, she is a person who's quite knowledgeable in some of these areas and is well educated in some of these areas. And obviously a new person always wants to establish themselves, and you're starting to establish the balance of power between the two countries. So I wasn't shocked by the response. Again, you know, on her side, it would be very difficult to implement this as well. I mean, it would be a catastrophic sort of thing. But in, you know, from the standpoint of the posturing and that sort of thing, these things, as you know, I try to stay out of the politics. I don't do a very good job, but I try to stay out of the politics. But you know, the posturing and that sort of thing doesn't surprise me too much. And as long as it's just posturing, that's fine. But we have some very real problems, and you just named some of them. We have some very real problems at the border that we desperately need to deal with. But I think cooler heads should prevail and try to deal with these things in a different manner than something that's going to really have prolonged adverse economic effects. You know, even around the world, I mean, during the campaign, there was talk about 10% tariffs across the board, maybe 100% tariff on Mexico, maybe 60% on China. I mean, a lot of numbers were thrown around during the campaign, maybe 20% across the board. A lot of countries, just for the same reason that President Sheinbaum reacted, a lot of countries are going to react negatively. If we impose tariffs on them, they're going to impose tariffs on us. This has been going on for centuries. And by the way, the math that shows us that this doesn't work was created in 1811. Okay. So it's not a new idea that this is not the best way to do things.
Wait, say more about that. So 1811, give us a history lesson on that.
Sure. Well, basically trade, the principle behind trade is, even to take a simple world, if there were only two goods in the world and you made both of them better than I did, and more than likely, if there are only two goods in the world, you would make both of them better than I would, because I'm not very good at that sort of thing. Even under that circumstance, if you did the one, what the Cajuns would say, if you did the one you did mo better, you know, the one you did a little bit better, had the relative advantage in, and we both did one and traded, we would be better off. That's the fundamental math behind free trade, that everybody's better off when you specialize in your relative advantage. That math was created by a guy named Robert Torrens, member of parliament in England in 1811. 2 years later, one of the major economic books of the classical era, David Ricardo's Principles of Political Economy and Taxation, popularized it. And in the ensuing 200 plus years, no one has contradicted it. Yes. And no policy prescription has contradicted it. And no outcome of any tariff in the world has contradicted it. So, I mean, it's a very basic concept that this is not the way to solve our problems.
So you're saying tariff wars usually don't end up with a winner?
Yeah, I'm saying tariff wars never end up with a winner.
I want to ask you something else about this, because we talk about this, you know, it's called the Texas miracle, you know, just what the economy here has done in over the years. And, you know, Mexico has been such an integral part of that. And I'm curious, you know, who needs whom more at this point? Do we need Mexico more, or does Mexico need us more?
Well, it's mutually dependent. We very much depend on one another. And another issue, which is not controversial at all these days, immigration, I'll plunge into that one since you raised that question. Obviously, you know, almost one out of every 10 workers in Texas is undocumented right now, today. 40% of our construction workforce, half our agricultural workforce, 30% of our hospitality workforce. And we basically don't have another place to get those workers. The number of undocumented workers far exceeds the number of people unemployed. And most of the people who are unemployed couldn't do those jobs. They're not in the right location to do those jobs and that sort of thing. So there's a strong interdependency here that we've had for quite some time that we need to be working on sensible immigration reform that lets us do that more efficiently and more humanely than we do it now with less risk to employers. We need to be working on ways that we can trade and cooperate more. But in that sense, I mean, you're looking at a situation where Texas needs Mexico both for its workforce and for the goods and services that are produced there and for the synergies you create. As you pointed out earlier, some things it's cheaper to do in Mexico where labor is at a premium. Some things where technology is at a premium, it makes more sense to do them here. Specializing in trading, the thing I was talking about that people have figured out a couple of centuries ago, is the best way for both areas to be better off. But it's hard to say who needs whom the most because basically there's a strong interdependence. We share a 700 mile border or something with Mexico. I've actually traveled it. We did a project a few years ago where we went all the way from Tijuana and San Diego all the way over to Brownsville and Matamoros and that area across the entire border. And it's obvious Texas is the dominant player in that in a major way.
That's a heck of a trip.
It really is. Over a period of months, we were in all the different countries, all the different states in both countries, meeting with all the government leaders and working on some ways to, again, make things better, do things better, cooperate on infrastructure, things like that, which is, you know, we've made some real progress in those areas over the past few years. It would be a shame to see something like this start to break that apart too, because both sides need better infrastructure to move things across the border more efficiently. And the cooperation on that is important as well.
Ray, I think some people would be astonished to hear those figures, though, that you were talking about of how much of our workforce is in the shadows here in Texas and are actually illegal immigrants. It just makes me curious again. I mean, Texas is offering up land to the new Trump administration, saying, here, put your detention and processing centers here to get illegals out of the country. When you hear about how integral a lot of those folks are to the workforce here in Texas, that's going to be an interesting thing to see play out.
It really is. And I understand it's gained a lot of political capital for a lot of people. And you guys talk about that stuff a lot more than I do. But basically, literally, if we were to truly do the extreme of what was said, and you know, they're now talking about, well, we'll do folks who are convicted of crime, we'll do this, you know, we'll do a few, this many and then that many, and we'll store them we'll house them somewhere here and there. And there's starting to be more of that talk. But if they literally tried to remove the undocumented workforce from the U.S. economy at one time, as has been the talk and some of the rhetoric along the way, we couldn't open the doors tomorrow. I mean, we couldn't build anything, we couldn't grow anything, and we couldn't go anywhere because those three industries are absolutely critically dependent on this workforce. And basically, you know, this is the way markets work. I mean, we're not, our population growth has slowed down dramatically. We're not having as many legal immigrants come in. We're almost to a point where we barely reproduce ourselves in terms of population growth. We still need more workers. Markets go find a solution. And the solution the market found was, there's some workers over here. Let's go get them. Unfortunately, again, we have to do it in a way that sometimes they suffocate in boxcars and things like that because of the inhumane way they cross. Some employers are breaking the law every time they hire someone. But that's the only thing that's available to us without some sensible immigration reform. And I think the silver lining to a lot of what's happening right now, at least I hope part of the silver lining, is we have needed real immigration reform in this country for at least 50 years. And if some of this discussion back and forth and some of the chaos that may come from some of these efforts that are being talked about can bring people to the table to have some sensible conversations and do some things that make sense, we could all be better off. I realize that's not the immediate short-term solution, but it may be something that can ultimately come out of some of what we're seeing right now.
Ray, the last thing I have for you is, you know, this has been a topic of discussion since the president-elect, you know, put out this notice several days ago. What has the talk been like in your community? I mean, you've got, you know, pretty elite economists, I'm sure, that you speak to and you speak with business people. What sort of things have you heard just in the rumblings since this came out?
Well, generally speaking, you know, the business community, the construction industry is apoplectic. I can tell you that because the agricultural industry is apoplectic because and I've talked to a number of folks in those areas because they recognize the situation and their dependence on these workforces. As far as economists go, You know, the old joke, you could put us all into, and we'd never reach a conclusion, and we'd point in every direction. But basically, I would say 90 to 95% of economists recognize that free trade is good. And those who don't miss that day of class, because we were all taught it. I happen to be in a realm of it where I do a lot more technical, sophisticated modeling of it. And I do a lot more interaction with business and government about these kinds of things, maybe than some do. But generally speaking, I think in that community, there's a general recognition that, number one, these policies are not workable. And number two, that it's highly unlikely they're going to be implemented and sustained. They may be implemented temporarily, but they're not going to be sustained, because if you did, you'd get the very numbers that you and I just talked about.
Ray Perryman, the economist extraordinaire, who founded and heads up the Perryman Group in Waco. Fascinating stuff. We may have to get you back on the line here in a couple of months and discuss how things are going.
I always enjoy being with you guys.
Really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Hey, y'all. Want to see the Jasons Talk Politics? Download the WFAA Plus streaming app for your smart TV. And watch the latest episode of Y'allitics,